I'm Dan Runcie, the host and founder of Trapital, and we're going to talk all about TikTok, because the platform and ByteDance-owned company has had quite the year in 2024. Things started off the gate hot. On January 31st, Universal Music Group sent out a press release that said that it would be taking its music off of TikTok if the platform couldn't agree to three of its issues that it had. The first was on the money that Universal Music got from its licensing fee, because Universal Music Group said that they wanted to make sure that there was fair compensation for the artists and songwriters that they represent. The second was around generative AI content that came from TikTok, and the third was around content moderation. Well, that standoff lasted 3 months, and frankly, it wasn't until Taylor Swift, one of the largest and most commercially successful artists at the moment on Universal Music Group, bypassed the record label and did a direct deal with TikTok. And that highlighted one of the many things that we've heard about the competing incentives that artists have and how they're looking at things much more broadly than just maximizing their recorded music and their publishing, especially if it can hurt some of the promotional objectives that they have for everything else in their business. And we've also seen a similar dynamic play out with Merlin, the association that works on behalf of indie artists and distributors, and some of its members that have been bypassing Merlin to do a direct deal with TikTok, despite Merlin's ongoing negotiations with the social media platform. But we've also seen TikTok take some L's, such as shutting down its TikTok music service and some of the reasons for that. We've also seen the ongoing threat of the potential TikTok ban. We've seen layoffs on the TikTok music team, but we've also seen increasing hires for the investment team and how TikTok is looking at M&A specifically within music. So music is still a big priority for TikTok. But is partnering and having deep relationships with the Western music world still as deep of a priority? Well, that's what we're going to get into in this episode. I'm joined by Tati Sirisano from Media Research, and we're going to talk about all aspects of TikTok. We'll talk about 2024, but everything that led up to this point and what we expect to see moving forward. Hope you enjoy. Let's dive in. This episode of Trapital is brought to you by HubSpot. They just released an amazing guide that I'm excited to tell you more about. The difference between staying overwhelmed and staying ahead often comes down to having the right tools and knowing how to use them. Well, our friends at HubSpot created a free guide just for you to supercharge your productivity with AI. It has 100 ready-to-use prompts that will cut hours from tasks like email, reports, and analysis. Using ChatGPT, Perplexity, and similar tools is becoming a skill. Learn the frameworks that you can implement today. The most valuable resource isn't just these tools, it's knowing exactly how to use it. You can download your free AI playbook by clicking the link in our show notes. All right, we're here to do a deep dive on TikTok, its role in the music industry, and how that continues to evolve year over year. We're joined by Tati Sirisano from Media Research. You and I have had several conversations about TikTok over the years, and when I started to think about this platform, this company, and its role in music, it feels like there's three distinct phases here. There's an initial phase around 2019. People were like, whoa, what is this thing? It's blowing up artists, around the same time that Addison Rae was on late night shows doing TikTok dances and stuff. Then you had the second wave. The platform started to mature. A lot of that viral growth slowed down. But if you were strategic and focused, you could still find your niche. And now we're in this third era where TikTok has clearly made some strategic decisions about where it sees itself with regards to other music companies. And we're starting to see some of that play out with how artists, management companies, the broader entertainment industry, and TikTok itself continues to relate with music. What's your take on that?
It's changed so much. I remember when I was still a reporter at Billboard being in our weekly pitch meeting and talking about, oh, there's this new app, TikTok. And everyone was like, oh, we don't know what that is. We don't care. And then a few weeks later, Lil Nas X and all that blowing up. And then suddenly it was 2020. And it was the only thing that I wrote about in lockdown. It was constantly like, what is TikTok? How are influencers factoring into music marketing? All these sorts of things. So I totally agree with your assessment of the three kind of phases. I feel like what's changed the most in my eyes is that TikTok is no longer just a marketing platform. It's also sort of a consumption one. Even in the way that ByteDance and TikTok present the platform, executives will often say, we're not a social platform, we're an entertainment platform. They will correct journalists on this. And I think that speaks to the platform's evolution, where, especially because it's a sound on platform with an unintended pun there with TikTok sound on service. You used to be able to scroll through Instagram and stream music at the same time, and neither thing would take away from the other experience. But now that social is a sound on experience with social video, it directly competes for music streaming time. So I think TikTok is presenting itself as an entertainment platform. Users are also unable to use it while listening to music, watching TV, other entertainment formats, etc. So both from the user side and how the platform presents itself, I think it's changed a lot.
And that terminology of calling it an entertainment platform, the major record labels and the indie labels too see it as more of a consumption platform, just given the large amount of music that continues to break there. And that in many ways was the crux of that public debate between UMG and TikTok when UMG had pulled its music off and then eventually put it back on when they signed the deal that they did. And we're seeing that play out now with the indies, with Merlin representing them. This, what is TikTok? How do you define TikTok? That theme continues to be an ongoing tension point.
Yeah. And I almost feel as an industry, we've shot ourselves in the foot a little bit by focusing too much on just using TikTok to drive streams and get people off that platform and monetize in that way. Because when you do that, there's a lot that's getting left behind. If you've read, anyone listening, our media report on bifurcation theory, something we've been looking a lot at is how there's this new generation of artists that are thinking, if streaming's not really making me revenue and it's not letting me engage with fans and be part of the culture either, why am I spending so much of my effort trying to be a successful streaming artist? And they're still releasing their music to streaming platforms, of course, and they still want their TikToks to drive streams, but they're starting to focus a little bit more of their time and energy, I think, on the social platforms themselves, including but not limited to TikTok.
Part of it is incentives. The recorded music industry trying to monetize that core asset. They want to make sure they can maximize that as much as possible. One of the reasons why earlier this year with the UMG and TikTok debate, why I believe we didn't see more artists align with UMG to support their push to increase the royalty rate is because artists, big picture, they're monetizing many of the things that you mentioned. They're trying to make sure that they can maximize their touring. They're selling merchandise. They're selling all these things that may not directly contribute to UMG's bottom line. And that's why you saw Taylor Swift do a direct deal. That Eras Tour had a large promotional engine thanks to her efforts on TikTok. So if you're cutting that off, you're also cutting off this other stream for them. The platform in its promotional offering offers so much more. And you've seen this with a lot of social platforms, but YouTube has always been a bit more in the middle because there are consumption aspects of it, and its YouTube Music does operate a bit like a DSP. So you're starting to see some of these shifts, but TikTok has been the one that, you mentioned it earlier, they had music and they were able to grow on the backs of music, like we saw many tech companies over the past couple of decades have done. But one of the things that we saw from UMG pulling its music off of TikTok earlier this year is that they didn't see a dip in terms of engagement. It gave TikTok a tremendous amount of leverage.
I have a question for you. Do you feel like with the Universal and TikTok licensing debate that went on, is the overall perception that it backfired for Universal?
I do think that backfired is a strong word, but people that I've spoken to, there was a deal that was on the table, but UMG has been a different company in recent years, and they are now trying to push certain things that a public company would do that you wouldn't see a private company do. And there are also new board members like Bill Ackman, people that are trying to push for more revenue to come from social media platforms. So even if there was a deal that was in place, if one person is trying to push to be like, no, no, you got to push back and ask for more, that can throw deals into a bit of a funk where the timeline is ticking and then now you have UMG put out the press release that it did. I think it's tough to say that it's backfiring anything when TikTok contributed less to UMG's bottom line than Peloton did. I were in their position. Of course, I could fully understand why you would want to make the case that you did. So it's really hard to say that it backfired, but it just echoes the competing incentives that are involved with artists, especially when you're no longer dealing with a company that may be quite as invested as trying to develop these close bonds and ties with the American Western-based recorded music industry and publishers the same way that other tech companies that came before TikTok did.
Yes, I agree. One thing that situation did reveal that's an important lesson is that I think consumers will always go with convenience and the path of least resistance. Would they prefer to have the full catalog of all the most popular music available to them? Absolutely. But if some of those songs are not there, most people were content to simply use other ones. That is a lesson that goes beyond the TikTok UMG debate into just creating products for music fans in general. People often do just take the convenient path, whatever that is.
I would agree with that. And that's one of the reasons why we see tech platforms continue to have success asking for forgiveness instead of asking for permission. But here's the distinction with TikTok versus some of the others. With some of the other platforms, there was this moment that happened where each of these platforms decided to build relationships with people that come from the music industry and that are well-respected in the industry that come in. They are also empowered to be able to speak on behalf and help guide. You saw this happen with Apple Music, Jimmy Iovine, Larry Jackson. When folks like that come in, it helps with some of the relationships and impressions, especially if you have artists like Taylor Swift, again, that had put out that notice when Apple Music had released and was talking about the free trial and, oh, are we going to get compensated for that? And all the stuff that came out from that. I think that was at least 9 years ago at this point. You saw it happen with Spotify as well. They bring in Troy Carter and he has a direct line with Daniel Ek and being able to have conversations there. You saw it happen with YouTube as well, with Lee York Cohen. He ran Warner Music Group. I think the distinction with TikTok is that they did have people in those positions. Ule Oberman was there for some time, head of music at TikTok. The difference with TikTok, though, is that for a company that is still owned by ByteDance, based in central China, where there is a very different perspective on regulations, relationships with the US, how to think about how you're empowering things. And we're taking a step back. This is still a company that has two versions of the app, right? One version of the app that works within the Chinese firewalls, and then another version of the app that is the global one that we see here. I don't know if those people had as much pull to make sure that the Western-oriented music industry was still empowered in that type of way internally. TikTok, even though it followed a bit of that large music tech platform, gains a lot of attraction and then continues to grow, but why its life cycle and relationship with the music industry has played out quite differently than some of the others.
Just made me think of another distinction. TikTok has brought in, like you said, some music industry people to help with those relationships, but they've also poached music industry people to do the same things for TikTok. They're not only trying to be a partner to the labels and the publishers, they're trying to bring that in-house. They have Sound On. They have this music content investment team now trying to actually buy rights. They're trying to bring more of the music value chain in-house, which is something that I don't think we've really seen. The only example I can think of is Spotify trying and failing miserably to add that direct upload feature, which everyone immediately freaked out about and they weren't able to do it. But I can't really think of other strong examples of platforms that have risen on the back of music and that have just tried to bring music in-house.
Let's take a break for our chart metric stat of the week. On TikTok, Ariana Grande gained more followers after UMG put its music back on TikTok than she did after the release of her album, Eternal Sunshine. Grande gained over 500,000 followers in the month after May 1st, the date that TikTok and UMG announced their deal. Meanwhile, from March 4th to April 29th, Grande gained just 300,000 followers despite her album coming out on March 8th. Part of that may be due to the inability to promote her music directly on TikTok, as you've been talking about in this episode. Part of that may also be Grande's renewed interest in doing more acting over music in the future, especially given the amount of promotion that we've seen for her role in Wicked. Let's get back to the episode. The DSPs that tried to do it, it just didn't work out long term. You mentioned the Spotify example, agree 100% there. You also look at Apple, what it did with exclusives, and there was some of this there, especially around like 2015, 16, And again,
and let's not forget that Apple still has Platoon.
True.
I just forgot that. So let's not forget that.
True. But yeah, you saw this happen, especially in the mid to late 2010s. There was still a bit of a Wild West with streaming. Growth was just so fast and you weren't quite sure how this was going to shake out. But none of those things lasted. And I think this is where TikTok is different, because you mentioned Sound On. There is a lot more focus on that, because someone had framed the question to me. They said, does TikTok still care as much about music, and do they want to be invested in music? And I don't agree with that statement or assertion, but I think the distinction is that they may not be as focused as some of the other companies I mentioned in terms of building these strong partnerships with the big three major record labels and the indie labels, but they are trying to build these things in-house. And some of those things, like Sound On, if you're working with a platform like that, that can come through TikTok, and there may or may not be the opportunity to put a heavy thumb on the algorithm to help those artists, those things can make a difference. The other thing that they tried and didn't succeed at was TikTok Music, the streaming platform. But that's the difference. Still interested in investing in music, but more in-house than trying to form these warm and fuzzy relationships externally.
Totally agree. That kind of gives TikTok a choice. They can either continue to go through these strenuous negotiations with labels and publishers, and or they can try to own more of the value chain from not just a Sound On and the investment, but also from the point of creation. They have multiple apps for music creation, Moth, Ripple, AI Song. They really are expanding across from the moment that something is created until where fans are using it in their videos and making their own versions of it, and the cycle continues. So I think music is more important than ever to them, and they realize that, but they're being honestly very smart, I think, as a platform in how they're going about like approaching that importance.
Smart is interesting, because I've went back and forth on this from a business,
from a purely analytical business analyst mind. I think it's smart. Do I, as a music fan, that's like maybe a different conversation.
I think that it could work out longer term, especially if the globalization trends continue and you can have a service like Sound On that really resonates in certain parts of the world that the more Western music industry isn't going to reach. So there's definitely leverage that's there that can come from that. From a strategic perspective, I get it. Everything that isn't in-house, it's all right, what is the most bare bones licensing agreement that we could have to just make sure that the music can come in board?
I also think that there's some of the challenge they might face with Sound On and trying to A&R and market artists through the platform is TikTok and every other social platform. The point is to keep scrolling. It's not really to stop and engage deeper on any one piece of content. It's a tough place to build what you need to have a long-term sustainable artist career. You can have songs be popular on the platform, but it's a relentless space to try and build a long-term career and a brand as an artist.
This echoes some of the difficulty of TikTok Music being able to succeed. There was a sentiment that a lot of people felt where they said, okay, if you're already the top of funnel, why would you not just create that next layer? Why can't you just go and create a music streaming service the way that Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, all the other DSPs do? And the reason that it didn't work is because the frame of reference that people go to TikTok for is so different than what people go to a DSP for. You talked a lot about here and even in some of your writing about how it is a laid back experience. It is meant to be an endless scroll. That's why that TikTok being the new MTV analogy has often been repeated, because of that. Yes, you have control, but you really don't in the way that the algorithm is giving you what it's giving you. And you don't even have to follow people for the algorithm to give you what they give you. That is so different than a DSP, where you need to at least have some type of intent to start your listening experience whenever you open a app. Everything is on demand in that type of way. So that is just very hard to transfer and capture on the same type of platform. But Sound On is very different, because music distribution, you're reaching people in a different way. So there could be interesting angles for something like that.
It's funny, because I've been super bullish about the opportunity for TikTok Music on this podcast and otherwise, for all the reasons that you mentioned. But I think you're also right about all of the challenges. And there's even more to break down. It's also just expensive, time-consuming, difficult to launch a streaming service, negotiating the music licenses. I'm sure that was a tricky part of it. Product design, customer acquisition. There's a lot involved. Maybe there wasn't enough upside to make it worth the investment. Maybe especially at a time where they're dealing with the potential that they'll have to sell off the US entity, right? Like maybe this just wasn't the right time for it. If they're going to have to turn around and sell, why invest all this time and resources? They have other avenues to explore, like shopping. It makes sense to me why they shut it down, or at least for now. But I do wonder if there was this thinking that TikTok doesn't really need a music app to compete with streaming platforms because it already does. TikTok is already a competitor for the same time and a lot of the same even listening contexts as Spotify, Apple Music, and the other DSPs.
There's a case there for sure, because TikTok is a platform that reaches a much younger audience than the rest of them. So you creating a streaming service under TikTok, that doesn't necessarily mean that those younger listeners are going to gravitate to that as how they listen to music. That's not necessarily how it works. You need to take a step back. Like you said, where are people just spending their time? And if they're spending their time on TikTok as opposed to a DSP, then it's less of thinking about it as a competing service and more just thinking about how will people engage and listen to music moving forward. One other thing that we should talk about is with that first phase, with all these artists are going viral, Lil Nas X, it was in one of those years where I believe TikTok had shared that there were 70 artists that came from their platform or rose up through their platform that were signed to either major or indie record labels.
I remember this. Yeah, I remember that.
We also didn't get the deeper dive on that a couple of years later to see how did those 70 artists pan out. A lot of people felt that a lot of them didn't pan out because the labels, they're less focused on artist development, at least in the traditional way that we may think about it. So you have these artists that blow up and have these viral hits. My gut is that a lot of those artists didn't pan out. Dixie D'Amelio, one of the D'Amelio sisters, was one of them. I don't know how that has played out. So the investment more so went to, okay, let's be strategic within niches and maybe cut back on some of the advances or things like that that we would have given to some of these artists that may just blow up and add millions of views otherwise. And then can we invest a bit more into the artists that were already proven beforehand, but TikTok just became a large growth engine for them to continue doing what they were doing, right? Doja Cat was already a known entity before TikTok blew up, but it was able to help amplify everything that she did. Same with a Lizzo or Ariana Grande or artists that really had leverage and lead into the platform in that type of way.
I remember I was at Billboard during that time too, and I don't think I've ever written the word bidding more times in my life, nor will I ever, than when there were all of these. Every week there was a new viral hit on TikTok and it was new to the industry and everyone was trying to snap these artists and their songs up. I think it was the situation that we were in where labels were trying to, as always, being motivated by capturing market share, grabbing the thing that's suddenly streaming like crazy and not investing as much in the artist development. But even if they did, it's really hard because you have these, in many cases, really young artists who are suddenly thrown in the spotlight, suddenly being asked to go on a tour or go on SNL and haven't had enough time to develop themselves. So I think the circumstances for making TikTok hit into a long-term artist success story were always going to be hard.
I do think that labels in general are known to take risks, and sometimes it's easy to make fun of a bad signing. And I even know that I've done this myself. And sometimes afterward, I've been like, oh, I probably could have worded that differently in the newsletter. But it's no different than a VC firm that may make bad investments. You get that one and that one then takes off, then that's the business. It was also the pandemic. Interest rates were low. People were buying Bored Apes and Pet Rocks and all that other crazy stuff. So I know that it was a unique time in general. One aspect that we probably haven't talked a lot about so far is e-commerce and how the company's also made a big shift there and how artists themselves have been getting involved with more brand deals related to TikTok. But the amount of commerce that TikTok has been able to push, especially after starting TikTok Shop not too long ago, it surpassed Alibaba in terms of being one of the top three companies that drive e-commerce in the world. I know that's something they want to continue to lean on. So incredibly strong focus in Southeast Asia. And from people I've talked to, by the end of 2024, they want to be able to have $50 billion of GMV that essentially is moved through TikTok, which is a huge number. And I do think that part of that is part of what they might use for leverage if a TikTok ban or if any type of TikTok restrictions come from the US government, so that they can make the case and say, look at how much we're contributing. If you try to cut this off, then why would you want to cut this off? And I do think that in what we now expect to see in Trump administration, I doubt that the ban will come, because some of the tea leaves of things that he said, and he started a TikTok account recently himself. I think it's a very different situation than 4 years ago when he was running for re-election against Biden, and you had heard more discussion about him trying to ban it. Whether or not it should be banned, I think that's a whole other conversation that you and I can get into. But for the sake of this, I do think that it's very unlikely that this ban will happen. And I do think that if that was part of TikTok's strategy to be able to just show how much it drives from a business perspective, then it's probably going to work out in their favor.
This is helping. I think it's unlikely that we see a ban. Trump has 14 million followers on TikTok, last I checked. He's not shutting that down. The law is supposed to be enacted the day before that he's inaugurated. We're still awaiting a decision. The first week of December or something is when we're going to hear if the court is upholding this law, and then the other side will appeal. I've changed my mind so many times on this over the past couple of months, but I agree. I don't think we're going to see an end to TikTok anytime soon.
No, definitely not. And even some of the rumors that had floated a couple of years ago, if they sold off the US part of the business, then it could go to a US company, and people were bringing up Oracle and Microsoft or private equity. And then additionally, they weren't going to give up the algorithm. The algorithm is part of the secret juice. So if you're not going to give that up, then what are these companies necessarily buying? You're just buying it to divest these things.
Totally. I think the CEO of TikTok said something like it would be a shell of its former self if it had to be sold without the algorithm, which is true. What is it without its algorithm? Another interesting, spicy question for you that someone else asked me a couple weeks ago: is TikTok being owned by ByteDance actually the best case scenario for music? Because if it was forced to be sold, Oracle, Microsoft, Walmart, do they care about music as much? If the algorithm isn't there, it's not serving its marketing role as well. Anyway, is this actually, as things are now, a better position for music than if TikTok had to be sold?
I think it's a best case scenario for ByteDance, for sure. A best case scenario for music, because of the potential loss that you would have, both from the artists that use it as much as they use it, from the commerce that it drives. I do think that there would be net negatives that would come from that. So yeah. I do think that still, despite some of the challenges and understandable issues that people do have for music itself, it still is the best place to go from there. For the health of the United States, from the aspect of being concerned about other governments and their ability to manipulate algorithms, to manipulate the minds of people in our country or others, I will stand off my soapbox before I even stand on.
It is interesting to think about with TikTok doing more with Sound On and signing and marketing artists. What's to stop them from using the algorithm to help boost those artists that it is working with? I think people in the music industry might not like that, but I don't think there's anything. They're not breaking the law. They're not like they could conceivably do that, and they could do it probably undetected. So why wouldn't they? Like, owning the algorithm is such a powerful place to be, especially when it comes to music.
I do think that is a concern for sure. And I'm sure that some of this probably already happens, but I'm sure even TikTok knows that there's a limit to how much you can do that until people start getting angry, and then people start complaining other reasons. We saw that play out 6 years ago when Drake had released Scorpion, and there were all those people that were angry about, why are you shoving this album down our throat? Why is it in so many playlists? I can't even open up Spotify without seeing his face on this or that. Ratchet Happy Birthdays on the most random playlist in Spotify. So, and then people push back on that. And to be fair, Spotify wasn't even the company that Drake had an exclusive deal with at the time. It was the competing service, Apple. So I do think that there's a fine line that you have with that. And Apple probably saw this better than anyone with the U2 albums. So even if you can press the thumb, I do think there's a limit to how much you can do it until fans get angry.
That's a great point. There is. And it's a light touch on that button that will make fans angry. I remember seeing a lot of people complaining about Sabrina Carpenter recently, like a few months ago, feeling like her songs kept coming up in the algorithm on Spotify, even when they sounded nothing like the other songs that the person was listening to. And people were like, why are you shoving Sabrina down my throat? I don't know if that's where that came from, but just another example to show you're right. If they feel like they're being overly marketed to, or even marketed to at all these days, I think they immediately tense up.
Because I think there's levels to it, right? There's some of it that they may expect to see, especially growing up, where you'd be like, oh, why am I hearing this song on the radio all the time? There's clearly demand for it. There's another part of it, which is payola and radio stations with algorithms. There's a limit in terms of how much you can do it until people start complaining, like the Drake Spotify Scorpion thing. But each of these major labels have deals in place, at least with Spotify on that side, where they are taking concessions on the advances to be like, hey, can we get less up front if that means that you'll play more of this particular song or this particular artist. And Sabrina Carpenter is a signed artist, so she's going to benefit from that in the way that a completely DIY artist does not have the leverage to have someone that is taking a concession on their compensation in order to get more play. All right, before we close things out, we should talk briefly about Merlin and TikTok. How do we see that playing out?
I feel like I'm always plugging Kristen Robinson on this podcast, but she's great. The Billboard reporter. I read an article by her interviewing people at indie labels about what they were going to do, because executives who felt like their artists depended too much on TikTok, that if they failed to reach a deal, the artist would be mad and then might go to a competitor. But then there were others that said, well, TikTok's not moving the needle the way that it used to for artists anyways. We are sticking with Merlin, not wanting to do these direct deals because we don't feel like TikTok has as much leverage anymore. I don't know if I can really predict, though, how it's going to play out. It's hard to say.
I think the best case scenario is that it probably plays out like the UMG and TikTok situation, where they end up taking a deal and it may not be for nearly as much from a royalty perspective that Merlin would have hoped that it would have been on behalf of the members of the association. But TikTok has the leverage. They're focused on music, not necessarily the music of the quote unquote industry, but the industry that they are trying to establish and firm up internally with everything that they have. That kind of echoes a lot about this next phase and what we continue to see and expect from TikTok moving forward.
It also highlighted the needs and the opinions of the artists themselves being so important to this, right? Like, these executives are saying artists may not stay with our label, or they may not come to our label if we don't make this deal, or distributors saying the same things, in contrast to with the UMG deal, how it almost felt like the artists were just pawns in that. On this side of the coin, their opinions matter more.
Well, unless you're Taylor Swift.
Unless you're Taylor Swift, yeah.
Who is oftentimes the exception to the rule. Well, Tati, this was fun. I appreciate you coming on. And I'm sure that we will be revisiting TikTok again at some point in the future.
Oh, yeah. See you next time.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. Send it to one or two people you think would really get value out of listening to this episode. And while you're at it, if you could rate and review the show, that would be great. Rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts, rate the podcast on Spotify, rate the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps make sure that the word gets out about Trapital and what we're building here. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you next time.